It's your boy, Sean, joined by the man who transcends space and time. The man who has discovered cold fusion. The man who has reinvented the wheel, Steve OG.
I think I slept through all that.
You join us.
I've been busy, but not that busy.
I thought you reinvented the wheel. You told me it'd be a sphere.
Yeah, it'd be rounder. Much rounder.
Join us as we open the Extreme Wrestling Archive, NWA ECW's World Title Tournament. All right, so where'd we leave off? Hardcore?
94.
Heaven? 94. Remember what happened?
It's still 94.
Yeah, this is actually the first card since Hardcore Heaven 94. They haven't done anything in between.
Nothing.
Just I think there was a TV show or two. But nothing live.
A lot of reruns.
Yeah. So last time, you remember, main event was what? Cactus Jack versus Terry Funk.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe they were... Weren't they beat up by the Bullet Academy? I can't get that.
What?
I think they fought to a no contest.
Right.
And the Public Enemy came in and... Yeah, they were trying to get Cactus to pin Terry after they beat him up, but he refused. So they just beat up the both of them. Which kind of would play into this.
It was a blue ball match. No one won.
Yeah. But that was it.
Right. That match.
What else did we have? Did Shane Douglas defend his title?
Yes.
Who did he defend it against?
I do not recollect.
Sabu, Too Cold Scorpio.
Too Cold Scorpio.
Yeah.
Yes.
What else? What did you say? You don't like how he was addressed? Or his name?
I didn't like his name. Well, I didn't say I did like his name. I had a lot of questions about his name.
Yeah, so, yeah, Shane Douglas didn't even wrestle on the card, actually. It was 9-1-1 versus Hughes, Sandman versus Tommy Dreamer. They had that Singapore cane match where Tommy Dreamer hit under the ring. Came out. Jimmy Snuka made an appearance for you.
And then never to be seen again.
Jason somehow won the television title despite being pinned himself first and then pinning Mikey afterwards. The ref counted three twice. So Chad Austin beat Tommy Cairo, and then we had Hack Myers and Rockin' Rebel. So that was actually a meh card. I guess the big thing was the base brawl match between the Public Enemy and the Bad Breed.
Because it was very extreme.
And confusing stipulations.
Yes.
So, but, yeah, and Cactus Jack, Terry Funk didn't live up to anything because, I don't know, they didn't do it. They
didn't let it happen.
Yeah, they didn't let it go. So, that's where we're at. Your current champs are your world champ, Shane Douglas. Obviously, and I'll only give him this, he didn't defend it in between these two shows is because there was nothing in between these shows. Jason, apparently, is your TV champion this time, and your tag champs are still the Public Enemy. So not much movement with the belts there, although finally somebody else got the TV title. Unfortunately, it was Jason. So, the show after that, they mentioned or advertised how their NWA wanted to crown a new world heavyweight champion.
And that title had been previously vacated in open... Because Ric Flair, right?
Correct. Yeah. So I'll get to that in just a second. They did advertise the brackets. It was Too Cold Scorpio versus Chris Benoit in the first round. 9-1-1 versus a mystery wild card opponent. Dean Malenko versus Osama Nishimura, and Shane Douglas versus the Tasmaniac. So on to the show. Like I said, there really wasn't anything in between. So we'll just get straight into the show. We are welcomed in by Joey Styles, telling us how, I guess this was one of the shows leading up, he's telling us how ECW will host a tournament to crown a new NWA world champ. So right. Now they can use, I keep always messing that up because I call him the ECW world heavyweight champion, but it's just a heavyweight champion at the moment, which means they can't go outside into the world, right?
They can only stay inside the gym.
Yeah. So, What's the deal with this NWA World title? You brought up a little bit of it earlier with Ric Flair. Why don't we go all the way back? Although it wasn't really formed until 1948.
We're literally going all the way back. Yeah. Like, before everything that happened after that.
Yes.
We're going before that.
We're going before what happened previously.
We're going before what happened after where you're starting. Right?
I've gone cross-eyed. I don't. Okay. So, although it wasn't formed until 1948, its lineage can be traced all the way back to 1905.
Oh, we're going further back now?
Oh, yeah, dude.
So you went back before everything happened after that. You went before that, and now we've gone before...
I went forward, then back, and then I went way back. Kind of like Back to the Future, I don't know, when they go back to the Wild West. Mm-hmm. But they go to the future, and they have hoverboards. But then they also have a floating train at some point.
That's number three, but that's at the end.
Oh, okay.
The very end.
All right, so 1905, George Hackenschmidt, which is very German, won a tournament in New York, New York, to become what basically everyone on the internet and wrestling smart.
They didn't have internet at that point.
Well, I'm saying nowadays.
Okay.
But so now we've
now gone forward.
Yeah, with the world's, fair and what did they have back then to get around?
Newspapers.
Just newspapers. Was there print back then? There was print, mass print. Okay.
It was much, much
slower.
Came much further in time after the printing press was designed. Like a long time after that.
Do we have paper too?
Yes.
What was that called? Papyrus?
Papyrus.
So, most considered him the first world heavyweight professional wrestling champion. This title, it was also held by such greats like Frank Gatch, Ed the Strangler Lewis, and the Golden Greek Jim Londis, who I've never heard of. But he did hold the title for just over 7 years, which is a long time. It's many, many bouts.
Okay.
Although I wonder how long, like they used to fight over in countries and stuff. How long would that take them to get back and forth? Would you go by ship?
Yeah, you're on a boat.
But I mean, that'd take like months.
They had airplanes.
But I mean, you're not riding a commercial airplane. This is like, this is like still kind of in the 30s and 40s.
Okay. Yeah.
The teens to the 30s.
Yeah, they would boat.
Yeah, but doesn't that take like at least a month?
No.
I don't know.
Well, they're not in a wooden ship.
Not like people in the galleys fucking rowing and connected.
No, they're not a Viking ship. they had steamships.
They had the steam powered engine.
They had gas. They had gasoline and stuff.
Alright. So
it took them the same amount of time it takes you to boat now across the
really?
Atlantic.
Oh, okay. Alright, so this title was eventually...
The Titanic sunk in 1912.
That was a steamship?
Mm-hmm. Steamboat. Steamer, if you will.
Steamer. Alright, so this title was eventually absorbed into the NWA World Title lineage, as it was customary for the NWA World Champion to go from territory to territory in the... You know, North America, South America kind of places. So that there would be, they were all just regional territories, but they recognized the NWA World Champ as like kind of the champion of all the territory. So he would go to each individual territory, defend the title. And that's why they held it for so long compared to now where you can win it and lose it in the episode of Raw. As national television began to grow, the NWA basically became exclusive to Jim Crockett Promotions, which would turn into WCW when Ted Turner bought it
Correct.
In 1986. So the belt was mainly held by Flair, Ric Flair, from like 1986 till 1991, when he left the WCW for the WWF, which had broken away from the NWA in the 60s. And it was actually called the WWWF at that point. So they were the first ones kind of to not include themselves in this NWA conglomerate. So the NWA champion wouldn't go in that territory and face them, which was the northeastern area where we live today. New York, Pennsylvania, that type of...
Connecticut.
Maryland, Delaware. get rid of. So the belt remained vacant for almost a year after Ric Flair did this, because he actually left the WCW and was kind of going into the WWF. And he still had the NWA World Heavyweight title, and it even appeared in some WWF episodes where Bobby Heenan was kind of introducing him as the real world champion, and he introduced himself as the real world champion. So it's kind of nice, because that belt is the shit.
It's a, monster big gold belt.
Especially I like the old one better, because it just looks more like classy. The new one, it looks fake.
Plastic.
Yeah. So then it was vacant after that for almost a year until Masahiro Chono won it in August of 92 in Tokyo. And then it made its way back into the States when Barry Windham won it from the Great Muta at Super Bowl III, which was in 1993. Which Ric Flair, in turn, finally won at Beach Blast 93, which leaves us to the point you had stated that Ric Flair kind of...
He finally said, I can't have this anymore.
Yeah, well, the WCW, right. Ric Flair had it, and the WCW basically pulled a WWF and kicked the NWA to the curb. So now the WCW has their own belt and title, although they kept a big gold belt. I don't know why I refer to it as like the international title. So at this point, the NWA world title has been vacant for almost a year, like you said.
Mm-hmm.
When WCW seceded from the NWA. So what better way to crown a new champion than using one of the hottest indie federations at the time to restore some class and dignity to the belt? What are your thoughts?
That was the pitch they made when they said, hey, let's have it in Philadelphia. Yeah. No, actually, they said that they had a bigger television audience in the Philly area and more of a reach. And that is why NWA said, yeah, that makes sense. Let's throw it to you guys.
Wow. It's a nice little tidbit. I didn't even see anything about that. Which makes sense, because then you get like New York and the MSG network and mm-hmm. everything comes around here. Because we're basically, where we are, it's in the middle of three major cities. So, you know. So we got like Buffalo, Cleveland, and Pittsburgh, and then over there you got New York. That's about it.
Well, the New Jersey cities.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Although I don't know how big their television markets are. So, to reiterate, this card was held on August 27th, 1994, 2 weeks after Hardcore Heaven, no show in between. We first see Dean Malenko cut a promo. Did you watch that?
I did.
My God.
It was long and arduous. It reminded me of like if you pay attention to the NFL, when like a team signs a free agent player, and then they have like a free agent press conference, and the free agent just like sits at a desk with like a tie on in front of like the team's logo, and he like awkwardly introduces himself to the media. And it's always weird and terrible and awful. That's exactly what this was.
I agree 100%, because this is the most uncharismatic interview I've seen in ECW.
Well, you can tell he was reading off a card.
Yeah.
He was just like, hi, my name is. And he was like giving like the elevator speech you give like the first 5 minutes of every like college class. Introduce yourself to your classmates.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You could almost hear him, much like myself, turning the pages.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So... basically, Malenko, he hasn't had much exposure in the States yet, but he is from the world-famous Malenko family. His father, Boris Malenko, mm-hmm. trained a lot of wrestlers in the States here. And much like me, he stutters over a bunch of his words as he's speaking them. Next up, we get Too Cold, Scorpio. I don't want to make it clear, you know, who mm-hmm. we're talking about. Mm-hmm. This one, a lot more charismatic. But still, the content is kind of dumb. Like, I don't know, a lot of get at me and whoop, there it is.
Again,
and
just introducing himself.
At least he had a big smile on his face and he was kind of getting into it. Dean Malenko just did not want to be in front of the camera. He also does like a James Brown, like, hi! Like at the end of his sentences. You know, when James Brown sings and he's always like, hi! No? Okay. I'll try to find out. See, maybe I'm just on crack. Finally, Paul Heyman... well, not finally, but next, Paul Heyman gets on the mic and saves us. He puts over every single wrestler that's in the tournament, which is good because you want to make this seemed like it's the top tier of people that aren't in the WWF and WCW, which almost basically, like, some of them should be, with the exception of Japanese fella.
I mean, like, you look at the names that are on this card, and you're like, these are soon to be well known names across the country.
If
Malenko, Chris Benoit,
they're people that are like hot on the dirt sheets right now, and they're hot in other promotions,
right?
Like you said, Benoit, Malenko, even like Too Cold, 911, not so much. Shane Douglas, I mean, he does what he do. So Paul, he does call the wild card a joker, which kind of made me giggle, considering I know it's coming. Seems like a little bit of foreshadowing there. Shane Douglas, he's up next. Basically complains about every other champion. Bret Hart, Hulk Hogan, Ric Flair. Typically what he does. At least he's a little more charismatic as well. I mean, he's got a lot of self-confidence, which I like, which plays to his character. You know, like, Dean Malenko seems so scared on the camera. But Shane Douglas really had no worries about being on camera there. He also has Curtis Hughes on, who says stuff. And then he mentions his finisher, which I hate every interview. He always mentions how The Undertaker, Lex Luger, and the Sidewalk Slam. And it's just annoying. So that's about it for that. That was all the promos we had
at the beginning. Yes.
What are your thoughts? First up, thinking of, like, the names, did you have any favorites, especially?
No.
No?
Not really.
Yeah, because unless you were watching at the time, and because you know who a lot of these people are now.
Right. Like,
they were really nobody.
They were nobody at the time, and, like, you know, knowing what you know now, yeah, right?
It's hard.
You know that, like, this was kind of a jumping off point for these guys. Like, yeah, this is how they got
discovered.
They're about to be discovered by the big entities that they ended up going into.
Yeah. All right, so first up, we have 911 versus the wild card. So who could it be? Of all the world travel veterans and upcoming stars that are in this tournament, who could possibly live up to the hype?
I don't know. Quit clowning around and tell me.
That's right. Doink the Clown. Although I think he just goes by Doink if...
You pretty much know he's a clown.
Just by the way, he looks... he is wearing a clown's uniform. So.
Right, yes.
So they introduce, Doink. I think it's just Doink because I don't know if WWF at this point trademarked
the clown.
The clown part. They could have Doinked the Clown. So who knows? He gets booed incessantly. Big chance of Kill the Clown. Then we get 911 chance.
And he does.
911 do.
He proceeds to pulverize.
Yeah. Well, Doink, I'll give him this. He does dodge two attempted choke slams at the beginning.
He does. And then he just gave up. And turned in. He stopped being a clown and started, like, being a crash test dummy.
Yeah. Yeah, that's exactly what he is. Yeah, so third one is not a charm as 911 choke slams him to the ground. Then he calls for one more. Fans really want it, so he does that again. And then a third choke slam gets 911 the victory. So this causes Paul Heyman to get on the mic. He says that this is no frickin' circus.
This is
the
ECW.
The ECW, as we would come to know. So Joey, he gets on the mic. This time there's no backdrop. Before, he was kind of in front of an ECW Eastern Championship Wrestling backdrop.
Now he's in front of a blue screen.
Yeah.
And he starts to talk.
Well, he stutters NWA. He says, well.
And then he peers over his left shoulder, and then he peers over his right shoulder. And then he peers over his left shoulder again, and he says, I'll tell you later.
Yeah, so not letting us in on the big secret. Right. He just says, we'll crown a new world champion, and this immediately cuts to Douglas versus the Tasmaniac. So this is joined in progress. So basically what we get is a T-bone Tazplex, and then Douglas, he blocks a belly to back and rolls up Taz for the three. He does hold it tight, however. So that was it for that match. I thought this was going to be a legitimate show, you know, or whatever.
It was like the Sports Center.
Yeah.
Of this event.
So, yeah, that, like, it cuts straight to Too Cold Scorpio versus
We are now in the championship round.
Yeah. Not yet. I don't think. This is still the first round. Technically.
Technically.
Yeah, cuts to Too Cold Scorpio versus Chris Benoit joined in progress.
And this High flying.
Yeah, this is when I realized that this is just a clip show. Like right. I said, this is just a Sports Center recap of what was going on. High flying. Benoit, he hits a superplex, but then like they kind of roll through it, and Too Cold sneakily gets the pin on Benoit, who thought he was pinning Too Cold. So I kind of don't get how you could be that dumb to not know that you yourself were getting pinned. But is that just me? Especially Chris Benoit. He hasn't had that many concussions yet.
Yet.
Just foreshadowing. So sneakily gets the pin, and Scorpio advances. You know what's crazy, though, is you bring in all these other wrestlers and they all job to the ECW guys. Right. Malenko. Well, then we cut to Malenko versus Douglas, which we didn't even see. Now we're in the second round somehow.
We learned that Malenko won.
Yeah, somehow. So we cut to the Malenko versus Douglas. Douglas, he hits like two pile drivers, and apparently that gets him the victory, although we don't even see a pin or anything, as that was clipped out as well. So I assume that's how he won. Because he goes to pin him, and then it cuts to Too Cold versus 9-1-1. So 9-1-1, he gives Too Cold a choke slam. Until Doink comes out and attacks Paul Yee on the outside. So this causes a distraction for 9-1-1. So he's out trying to save Paul Yee, but then Matt Bourne comes out and attacks 9-1-1 and gets him to be counted out. So how could Matt Bourne possibly be in two places at once, as he is Doink the Clown and himself?
Jason Bourne?
No. Ooh, that would be good. Although Doink finally unmasks himself, and we do see it's Shane Douglas.
Aha.
So, wacky antics there. Wacky WWF antics there. I think they're just playing off of that. You know, because that's the type of shit he'd pull in the WWF. Be seeing double. Alright, now we're up to Too Cold versus Shane Douglas. We're already in the championship match. We're, what, 15 minutes into this?
Like 20. 15 yeah.
This is the finals. Luckily, they do show this one in its entirety, so we will see it here. So originally, we got some feeling out in the beginning. They exchanged leg locks, and a near fall almost gets Scorpio the win, but not so. More reversals into a two count. Too Cold showing off his wrestling skills to stir. You know, he's billed as a high flyer or whatever, but he can still wrestle with Douglas here. Douglas gets a slap in. Which, this really fires up Scorpio. So Scorpio turns on the high impact offense. And then they trade back and forth, I think like four or five small package reversals. Only gets two counts. So this just leads to another stalemate. Douglas, he sets up for a superplex, but Scorpio faceplants Douglas and hits a high crossbody. I mean, he gets so much airtime. He's up there for like ages. I was able to go to the bathroom and come back and watch him finish the move. It was very, very nice. Only gets a two count, though. He slows it down with a chin lock. Douglas, he eventually breaks free and applies one of his own. Too Cold then reverses that into an electric chair drop. Are you familiar with an electric chair drop? It's where you're up on your shoulders and you just draw back with them. You drop them. Scorpio, he takes to the air again, hits a slingshot splash, a very high missile drop kick, and then he hits Douglas with a baseball slide, which leads to some brawling on the outside. Douglas, on the outside, he hits the steel, goes over into the crowd. Too Cold follows him in. Basically just do a little brawling in the crowd there. Not much. Obviously can't see it because I don't have mobile cameras yet. Or mobile enough cameras. So we go back to ringside. Douglas, he plants Too Cold on the guardrail. Then Douglas gets back in the ring. Too Cold starts to follow him in, but Douglas suplexes him in, making his entrance into the ring a little quicker there. So Douglas, he misses with a second rope crossbody, trying to show off his high-flying prowess, which fails, obviously. Hits a devastating tombstone. But then he goes up for the moonsault, which is picture perfect, dude, but misses. This leads to Douglas getting in the belly-to-belly suplex, which is his coup de grace finisher, and gets the three count. So Shane Douglas is your new NWA World
Heavyweight Champion
of the world. Not
on Earth.
So, Too Cold gets on the mic, tells him that he was just the better man tonight, Douglas, that is. But Scorpio will, quote unquote, be on his ass. So what does that mean?
I believe he means that he will face him again.
He'll pursue him in a wrestling match.
Match of wrestling.
Oh, okay. Just didn't seem like the right verbiage.
It's a local colloquialism.
is that Philly talk there? Okay, so Douglas, he gets on the mic, and then he cuts his infamous promo.
It is a long promo.
Do you want to
tell?
Yeah.
Can I chat about it a little
bit?
Yeah,
I want you to tell
me. So he gets up there in a very respectful way, honoring the belt and what it means and its heritage, and talking about the fantastic wrestlers over the past decades, even back to what you're talking about, right?
Yeah.
Who have owned this title, worked for this title, you know, put everything on the line so they can wear this belt. And then quick heel turn, right? He basically tells them all to shove it up their ass,
yeah.
Right? Chucks the belt on the ground, says, I don't want this. NWA has been dead for years, and I don't want this belt. Walks the side of the ring. Someone hands him the ECW championship belt and basically declares himself the ECW champion. This is the belt that matters. This is the championship that matters. And then
declares himself a world champion.
Declares himself a world champion.
Yeah. That's right. So, sounds good. Yep. So, yeah, he throws down the NWA belt, rises the ECW belt, tells him he recognizes that as an ECW world heavyweight title. We get some massive ECW chants to the point where Too Cold gets on the mic and you can't even hear him. As like I was looking around the audience, no one is chanting ECW, but it's so loud. Like I don't even, they're all just like kind of like talking to each other and stuff. But then they do start a Flair is chant or Flair is dead chant, which I actually do see them cheering that. So
now they cut to a backstage interview.
Yeah, this is kind of funny. They cut back to an interview with Dennis Corluzzo,
NWA director,
president, yeah.
Right? And he basically tells them that. You can't disrespect the belt that way. That belt should be like he's the champion no matter whether he likes it or not. But he should be stripped of that title and the ECW title because he doesn't deserve either for disrespecting the belt that way.
Because the ECW
is a member of NWA.
Yeah. So that's kind of funny. In real life, though, Dennis Corluzzo, he's always had issues with Todd Gordon. They've been competing territory. So now it's kind of funny that Dennis Corluzzo is the president of the NWA and Todd Gordon's right underneath him. So yeah, like you said, he still recognizes Shane Douglas as their champion, even though he doesn't want to, which I thought was kind of a cool idea, you know. But now apparently at this point, like in real life, Corluzzo thought this was like some kind of like just
work. Some shtick.
Yeah. So like it's kind of funny that like all this shit's going on or whatever. Todd Gordon even gets a camera to come back and interview Corluzzo when he sees this is going on.
Uh-huh.
And he still cuts like a kayfabe, like in-character promo.
And then a week later, Gordon cuts a promo. And he's like, oh, by the way, I dissolved Eastern Championship Wrestling.
Yeah. NWA.
Yeah. And reformed a new organization now called Extreme Championship Wrestling.
Yeah, so
that is not affiliated with NWA.
Yeah, so it's kind of funny, like that Corluzzo thought it was all part of the program, but he got like triple crossed by like Paul Yee, Todd Gordon, and Shane Douglas. So I was pissed that this show was completely clipped, knowing the significance of what was going to happen in this show.
I think that's why they did it though, because it wasn't the matches that meant a damn thing.
That's true.
The shtick, right? It was the shtick. Like think about when you were like deep into Raw, right? What was the most important part of Raw? The first 20 minutes of Raw and the last 20 minutes of Raw,
exactly.
Right? Nothing in the middle mattered.
That's true. You need the opening promo and the closing promo.
Right. The closing fight broken with the promo.
Yeah, I guess you're right. I never really thought of that. But I wonder if there were some kind of like legal issues or...
That's what I probably figured. But, like...
because they released it on, you know, it aired a couple weeks later.
But they didn't. They didn't even show the Japanese fella, Nishimura. Right.
Yeah.
But
I'm sure NWA wasn't very happy after all that. Probably weren't going to allow them to air as much as they.
That could be true. So I don't know. But I did mention all the way back in episode 3B, Blood Feast, Night 2, that I would mention why big names on the show weren't shown like on TV or anything like that. But then totally forgot and never did mention it ever again. And it's just been hanging out in limbo ever since then.
Okay.
So like,
so, so what you're about to get to tell us is like 3D Appendix A.
Yes. So there was like some matches that never aired, or why they completely clipped the November to remember last year, was there was a Terry Funk and his partner, because I believe Hawk took off. He was partners with King Kong Bundy, but they never actually showed that or anything. And I think it was because King Kong Bundy still kind of. I think he was under contract with the WWF, so he's allowed to appear at live events, but they weren't allowed to like market him or show him on television or video or anything. So I wonder if that's what happened, if that's why we didn't see the Malenko Nishimura match, because I think Nishimura was with New Japan Pro Wrestling, but he was just touring through the States at the time. He'd end up in the Global Wrestling Federation prior to this and Smoky Mountain Wrestling after this. So, all in all, it's kind of hard to make judgments on this card as a whole, as it basically wasn't a whole. It was basically one match. But like you said, in retrospect, and honestly, those matches don't even fucking matter. And I think they would have known these matches aren't going to mean shit after they
after we air this anyway.
So there's no point in going all out in these matches, because no one's ever, they're only going to remember the promo at the end. But it does have a mega significance, as it was the pivotal turning point in ECW. Like you said, you can pinpoint the turning point in WCW, you can pinpoint the turning point in WWF. You can
put them up on a bulletin board and get your red string out.
Yeah, so this, I believe this was that point here. So what better way to get some publicity than to shit on a belt with a 90-year lineage? Although the NWA really hasn't been the NWA since Jim Crockett kind of took exclusivity of it in the 80s. This is basically the split off of NWA Eastern Championship Wrestling into Extreme Championship Wrestling, which we know and love today. So.
What I think is like interesting about this, like this happened in 94, right? Okay.
Yeah.
And like you think about like the two game-changing defining moments of the Attitude Era, or like the Monday Night Wars, right?
Yeah.
Montreal Screwjob.
Yeah.
97, right? Yeah,
Survivor.
And Hulk Hogan NWO debut, 97 or 90, early
98? That was
96. 96, okay, right? And like, if you think about it, you can like draw the correlations of what those are right here from this event, right? Like NWO, like this heel organization, like this ECW, it's a heel turn, not of a guy, of an entire group of wrestlers, right? Like that's what that is, right? And then the surprise change of the Montreal Screwjob is Douglas chucking this belt down, saying,
"Yeah, like you said, that when that Hogan heel turn with the NWO, that skyrocketed WCW past WWF, and WWF almost went bankrupt in '97 because they were being destroyed by the NWF, which was a great gimmick in itself. And then,
but it's like directly stolen from what happened on this night '94, right?
Yeah. So, and then like you said, when Vince screwed over Bret Hart." For the Montreal Screwjob for Shawn Michaels.
That's what started the Mr. McMahon character and skyrocketed
the WWF
Raw and the Attitude Era.
And that's when like wrestling was so hot. Like there was like this like 10 to 15 million and it like peaked.
But it happened two and a half, 3 years after they did this.
Yeah. Right? So this just wasn't mainstream enough at the minute to, because NWA wasn't big enough to do this against anymore. Like if they had done this in the late 80s or maybe then it would, but I mean, the NWA has basically been floundering since this is kind of just because with mainstream television, you can't really keep the regional promotions because everyone knows what's going on anymore. And the internet's coming around.
Right. Well, you just think about like in the early 2000s when they're like, you know, they stole everything from ECW.
Yeah. Yeah.
They did. Right here on this night, you could trace everything back to
them,
right?
Yeah. So, hey, it works, and it still worked. It worked both of those times.
Right.
But, yeah, basically a screw job is what or a big fucking swerve would lead to like Hogan heel turning, which he hadn't been heel in like 10, 15 years, then McMahon literally screwing over Brett after like he just, I think, offered him like a 20-year contract or something for like name is price or whatever. And then once the NWO was coming around in 1997, like WWF was in dire straits. They were about to, like, he's like, I can't honor this. He's like, go talk to WCW.
We're moving in a different way.
Yeah, and then like Bret Hart wanted to stay with the WWF, but then Vince McMahon screwed him over, and that led to the on-screen character of Mr. McMahon, which in turn led to the fucking boom of Stone Cold. Yeah.
In the XFL.
Yes.
We wouldn't have He Hate Me.
In WWF New York, the restaurant that was around for about 8 months. All right, so back to the show here. We see the Public Enemy come through, and they kind of spray up. I thought this was fun.
It took way too much time.
Yeah, though. That was not sneakily at all. You do not know how to use spray paint. They didn't even cross out the eastern part.
They tried, but he didn't have the paint shook up enough.
Yeah. So, but they did get the Extreme in, and it looked all right. It looked more like that
script.
Fucking, like, yeah.
It looked like a font. Yeah. So. Like a font that looks like graffiti. That's what it
like Photoshop.
Yeah.
But no better people to do that with than the Public Enemy, the Hoodies, you know. So that was funny. They say they're going to take it to the Extreme. Then we do get Douglas's backstage promo claiming that this is an athletic sport as opposed to a cartoon wrestling sport of WWF and WCW, which they kind of were in the friendly, child-friendly era right now. So then we cut to a Matt Bourne Douglas promo. Claiming this is no cartoon. Now, Bourne, he's got like half his face paint on still. His doink, he's grown out his beard. So you could, I think that's the epitome of how you can tell the difference in prices. Time. No, not time. Like props and effects, hair and makeup, all that stuff as WWF compared to ECW. Mm-hmm. WWF, his face paint's all like pristine and
they have people doing it for him.
Here it's like he just slapped something on real quick. But it's him turning towards a grittier person. So they're trying to get over that he is the epitome of that cartoon and Douglas wants to turn him into the wrestler that he is, which he is a sound mat wrestler. So he cuts like a half doink promo, puts his shirt on, but then immediately takes it off. It's so weird. Like he puts his redneck flannel on and then just takes it off immediately. So I don't get what that was. Really no better way to get this doink. I mean, I feel like they could have used this doink character because the ECW fans aren't going to hate anyone more. Like nobody epitomizes WWF more than
Doink the Clown.
So he'd be a great like antagonist, I think, for the...
ECW. They're not fighting him. They're fighting that
Exactly.
mantra, that era.
What he represents, basically. But I guess they wanted to kind of transform into Matt Bourne, so I guess he couldn't play that character forever. Also, there's a couple more matches on this card, but we'll get into those later.
They're like, oh, we're out of...
we need to fill more.
We have more time to fill.
Oh, wait, this show is only 33 minutes. We need to...
That doesn't even fill someone's VHS tape.
Yeah, so we'll get to that in a little bit when we start to close out 94 here. All right, so now on TV, since there was no card in between, we'll finish out the TV episodes here. Tommy Dreamer and the Sandman began feuding. First, they had a Singapore caning match in which a loser would get 10 whacks with a cane. Dreamer, he ended up losing due to interference from Woman. So Todd Gordon comes out, says he doesn't need to take the caning due to the interference. But Tommy Dreamer, like a super duper babyface, says, you know what? I lost. I will take the beating. So he's trying to get over as a face, but also get over to the hardcore fans. Because remember when he first
He must be a hardcore face.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Remember when he first came in, he looked kind of like a gay fireman. And he was a pretty boy and all that stuff. He's trying to prove himself, which has slowly been taking its course over the year here of 94. So he says he'll accept the punishment, and in a very famous spot, he takes the cane shots from the Sandman, even though Woman says she'll stop it if he begs her to stop the Sandman. Dreamer, he gets on the mic, and this is when he delivers the, "Thank you, sir, may I have another?" Which, after he gets caned, like, you can see his back is just ripped to shreds. It's nasty, but... that's kind of funny with the that thank you sir may I have another spot was kind of famous for him getting over as hardcore. This leads to an I Quit match between Dreamer and Sandman. So in this match, Dreamer, he actually knocks, like, Sandman's up there smoking while he's still in the match. And Dreamer, which is
taking a breath.
Which is a bad idea. Breathe in treatment, as we call it. So it's a bad idea. It's probably why they banned smoking indoors.
And outdoors.
But anyway, Dreamer, he knocks the cigarette into Sandman's eye. Mm. So he's, like, covering his eyes, whatever, and then woman tries to hit him from behind. He grabs the cane and then canes the Sandman in the other eye. Mm. So this basically blinds the Sandman. He's down on the ground, bleeding, freaking out.
And on fire.
Screams, he quit. What?
And he's on fire.
Yes. Well, no, I don't think he's on fire. But he got burned. So he says he quits. You can hear him, like, squealing and stuff. He sold it really well. Amazingly, this was sold, like, everyone came out to the Sandman, like, looking legitimately concerned, like, heels and faces alike. Even Todd Gordon came out, you know, they're all pissed at
Dogs
Dreamer.
And cats are living together.
Yeah. And, like, they're telling Dreamer to get the hell out of the arena, you know. He's like, I'm sorry, you know. Like, he's, like, almost in tears, freaking out. Woman's screaming incessantly at him about how he's a son of a bitch, yada, yada, yada. They kind of display this very wonderfully on the October 4th. Episode of Hardcore TV, because they start the show. Joey Styles is in front of a hospital saying one of the wrestlers has taken it too far to the extreme, and you don't really realize it until towards the end of the episode that it's actually the Sandman. They show what happened and all the issues that were going on and everything. So the following week, Dreamer, he gives like a teary-eyed interview saying that from now on, every time he wrestles, he's going to wrestle for the Sandman, be there for the it's kind of gay. But the Dreamer just, he comes across as very emotional, which he would be, and which he is. I think he cries all the time, like in real life. He still gets the crowd behind him, you know. On the October 18th show, Tommy Cairo, who he hadn't seen in a while, is live via satellite, because the Sandman had put him out previously before, I think, what was it, Heat Wave? Somewhere around there. With the Dueling Canes match, and Cairo's basically been on the shelf. He's grew his hair out. Apparently he's been passing the time by growing a garden of fruits and vegetables. So we see him in his fruit and vegetable garden. And throughout the length of this promo, he slowly starts to turn heel, saying that no one ever gave a shit about him since he's been gone, like they have the Sandman, that he wishes he could have been the one that was there to see it, see his eyes get, see him get blinded, and then he does like a cool thing where he picks up like a rake, and he's like, who am I? He's like, oh, my eye! And it's really kind of, he just ends up mocking the Sandman throughout the interview, which pisses Dreamer off and says, like, what the hell's wrong with you? So now we kind of got Dreamer and Cairo testing each other here. Right after that, actually, though, we get Woman telling us via phone from the beach that she's done with the Sandman. You know, he's hurt. I ain't got time for that. She's like, I'll manage someone else because I'm the shit, yada, yada, yada. So she basically dumps the Sandman after he got injured. Very heel-like. Tommy Cairo, he makes his return in the ring by destroying Mikey Whipwreck, only for Tommy Dreamer to come in and make the save to set up a match between Dreamer and Cairo.
Build it.
So that basically leads us up to November to Remember with the Sandman, Cairo, Dreamer storyline. Woman. I think that's all players involved. So during this time, Sabu, like between August and November here, Sabu and Cactus had another match, which I said they had better ones. This one's awesome, dude. I thought it was way better than the one that they had at Hostile City Showdown. I think Sabu breaks three of his ribs, and then Sabu breaks a bottle over Cactus's head, like, way better than the last one we saw. That's something to look into in between there. Also, Jason, remember him? He won the television title. He's got his own little stable there where he's managing almost, like, everybody, it seemed like. And anyone that was heel was in Jason's stable.
Right?
So he had the Rockin' Rebel. He had Chad Austin. He had the Pit Bulls. Following this, he actually him and the rebel come to odds, and he kicks out the rebel. And then the next week, we see that he gains Dean Malenko.
Hello.
So, tit for tat there. And then there's another funny spot, actually, where he sings "You Are So Beautiful" to his television title. It's one of the funniest things I've ever seen. While he's like riding a bicycle, it's fucking hilarious. So, big thing with now being Dean Malenko in here, he's like, they call him the shooter. Like, no one can break his holds. He's a perfect grappler, whatever. The Tasmaniac reverses one of the famous Malenko arm bars and then puts on one of his own, leading to those two to feud. So that's kind of towards the mid-card there. You have a little bit going on there. And then it's kind of funny, during the month of September, the ECW arena was completely shut down for a month, the whole month of September. So they actually started running shows like in Hamburg at the Fieldhouse, which I think we've been to.
And
Jim Thorpe, Pennsylvania. But mm-hmm. these would only draw like 300 people in attendance. So they also ran a show down in Florida where they ended up picking up Ron Simmons. Are you familiar with Ron Simmons?
I am familiar with Ron Simmons.
Yeah. And then they also ran a couple shows at Pulsations Nightclub, which I believe had titties there, I would assume.
Oh,
because that sounds like a gentleman's club.
Well, wasn't there a shooting? That was Pulse.
Yeah, that was in Florida. This was in, I think, somewhere up here.
Oh, okay.
So this leads to November to Remember, 1994. Now, this was a two-night event, believe it or not. The first night,
two nights,
was November 4th in Hamburg, Pennsylvania, and this had 355 people in attendance.
Okay.
What was I going to say? This is like ECW. This would turn into like the WrestleMania. November 2, remember? That's their flagship trademark show.
Okay.
So first night, we had nothing really exciting, to be honest with you. The Pitbulls versus the Bad Breed. We see the return of JT Smith versus Tony Stetson. Chris Benoit versus Stevie Richards. The Public Enemy versus the Pitbulls. This is definitely shows where they'd still wrestle more than one match a night. The Jim Powers versus Ray Odyssey, who only made a couple TV appearances for ECW. This is a big thing, is Too Cold Scorpio took on Jason Knight for the ECW TV champion. And this was actually Too Cold would defeat Jason Knight to win the ECW TV title. Ron Simmons showed up. He took on Dino Sendoff, which was nothing to talk about. The Public Enemy faced a no contest against 911, Hack Myers. Later in that night, Dean Malenko actually defeated Too Cold Scorpio to win the ECW TV title. So Too Cold Scorpio held that for less than a night. Shane Douglas, he took on Jim Powers. Tommy Dreamer defeated Don Harris of the Ron and Don Harris brothers. Tasmaniac, Sabu, and 911 defeated the Pitbulls in Dean Malenko. So I bet that was a nice little match.
I bet that was a good match.
Mr. Hughes defeated Chris Canyon. Cactus Jack and Mikey Whipwreck defeated Dean Malenko and Jason Knight. Ron Simmons, Too Cold Scorpio, and Chris Benoit defeated Mr. Hughes, Shane Douglas, and Hack Myers. During the match, Benoit actually walked out on his team, and then Shane and Mr. Hughes turned on Hack Myers, causing him to get pinned. The last match was the Cactus Jack versus Sabu in a Falls Count Anywhere match. So that was the one, I think, where they broke a bottle over his head and Sabu broke his ribs. Mm. So ECW Night 2 was the next day, the 5th of November, 1994.
Remember the 5th of November. Remember from B from Vendetta?
Yeah. It's not the 5th of November, though, is it? Oh, is it?
November 5th, 1955. That was the day Marty McFly went back to time.
That's an important date.
That was the date that Doc Brown invented time travel. He was hanging a clock in his bathroom, slipped on the toilet seat because it was wet.
Why was he standing on the toilet
seat? He was hanging a clock.
Oh, okay.
He slipped, hit his head, made a picture in his head. A picture of this. The flux capacitor. Which is what makes time travel possible.
Yeah, you need to get one of those. Alright, so night two was back at the ECW arena. 1,000 people in attendance. We had JT Smith defeating Hack Myers. The Pitbulls defeating the Bad Breed again. Too Cold Scorpio defeating Mr. Hughes. Tommy Dreamer defeated Tommy Cairo, which was built up as a nice little match. Dean Malenko, he defeated the Tasmaniac. the ECW champ, Shane Douglas, actually defended his title against Ron Simmons.
Okay.
And then attacked Ron Simmons after the match. But Too Cold Scorpio made the same. The Public Enemy defeated Cactus Jack and Mikey Whipwreck to regain the ECW
World Tag Team Champions.
World Tag Team Champions. In a baseball, how do you say that? Base brawl games match. Chris Benoit, he defeated Sabu. I guess it was a no contest since Sabu got injured. We'll go into that in a little bit here. And then Chris Benoit fought Too Cold Scorpio to a double countout. So that was your big November cards there, which I don't know why they did it.
On two nights.
Two nights, yeah. But basically, throughout these two nights, we have new tag team champs, which are the old tag team champs. There was an announcement after this match. Shane Douglas was on the phone with Sherry Martel at the end of the match, and he announced that him and Stunning Steve Austin would take on Too Cold Scorpio and Ron Simmons. So that was kind of a bombshell. Sandman, he had his retirement party from being blind. Remember? So Sandman's in the ring, kind of saying goodbye to the fans, and then Peaches comes out, and she has big fake tits now. So it's kind of funny. She's like, I've kind of changed, Sandman, you know, because he can't see anything because he's got bandages over his eye. And it's kind of funny because the Sandman's like, I don't care how fat you've gotten. He's like, I missed you. And, so, and Styles is like, Sandman? Because her boobs are just huge. Woman, she then comes out talking about who she's going to manage, whatever. And Kane's Peaches, like, right in the face. It looks pretty brutal. Then Tommy Dreamer comes out, kind of to make the save. As the Sandman's trying to hide, you know, because he doesn't know what's going on because he can't see. So Dreamer got in between the Sandman and Woman. Woman looks like she's about to attack him, you know, so Dreamer's back is turned to the Sandman. Sandman takes the bandages off. He swerved us all, grabs a cane, and then destroys Dreamer. We'll come to find out that this was actually all just a ploy to get Dreamer to take out Cairo for the Sandman.
The long con.
Yeah, so this is like next level evil shit.
Three-dimensional chess.
There's many, many levels.
Level of one, evil. Level two, level three, level four, level five, level six.
Isn't there only seven?
Level layers? Seven, level eight.
I thought there was only seven.
And a seven layer cake.
Oh, seven levels of hell, isn't it?
That means you could always build a new one.
So that was actually a long-term booking. And from what I understand, like the Sandman, he even had to like stay at home to like sell this injury, so he didn't leave the house or nothing, like didn't go out, because he's a Philly guy, you know, people, he's very recognizable, and apparently he never didn't leave the house for like 2 months, which I think would be easy for me. I don't know about you. Okay, so another thing that kind of is gonna, back in at Heat Wave 94, episode 7, I said that Sabu didn't sell his neck injury very well, and it was going to come back to bite me in the ass. Did you got to see, like, Chris Benoit breaking Sabu's neck.
Nerve damage.
Yeah.
Caused, like, legitimate nerve damage.
He landed straight on his head, and even in one of the episodes, man, they slow-mo it, freeze-frame it, draw pictures around. It's you're staring at this for, like, a solid 30 seconds, and it's gruesome to look at. But, yeah, this would keep kind of Sabu out for a little bit. I mean, I'm surprised he didn't become paralyzed. But apparently he just bruised his vertebrae and, like, there was in his spine and there was just nerve damage. And I think this is where Joey Styles broke out his first, oh, my God. So that'll become a staple. Like I said, Shane Douglas, he defended against Ron Simmons. This is one of the other matches on the world title tournament that I said earlier. Of course, the finish was cut out. Douglas attacks Simmons post-match, but is saved by Too Cold Scorpio. And then later in the night, in front of the crowd, you know, he's on his portable telephone, which I don't know how you'd hear in there, but he's calling Sherry Martel and states that you have a partner, the only person he respects from WCW, Stunning Steve Austin. So this is the romance between WCW and ECW that we saw before. Although this is like originally what Paul Heyman wanted the last time. He didn't want like Arn Anderson and
right.
Bobby Eaton. So he wanted like Austin. This would take place the 19th after November to Remember, but before Holiday Hell. So, unfortunately, Austin, he was unable to wrestling due to a knee injury, probably from wrestling Jim Duggan, which he was in a feud with at the time, over the United States title. So Sherry introduces that he is replaced by the next best thing, his Hollywood blonde partner, Brian Pillman. Huge pop. And Pillman is fucking ripped. I think, yeah, these two are what Heyman originally wanted.
Right.
So they have a match or whatever. It is shown on TV. We won't go into it. But Sherry ends up turning on him by using her heel. She went to go hit, I think, Too Cold, hit Douglas instead. She didn't seem to care. Brian Pillman throws her back into the ring, kind of as she's wearing a sweater. He rips it off, and then she's got a picture of Ric Flair in her bra, covering her breastises. Which Douglas sees, gets pissed, proceeds to pile drive Sherry. Mm. More woman violence, always a good thing.
Not true.
I love it. I don't care. I like to see women holding their own, getting in on the action. I mean, he's not just sitting there like backhanding, pimp slapping her. She caused it on herself. So in between all that, at the November to Remember, like I said, Too Cold defeated Jason, who was in turn defeated by Malenko. And then the Public Enemy defeated Cactus Jack and Mikey in a base brawl match to win back the tag titles. Also during this match, Sabu interfered. They had stacked, I think, Cactus on two tables out by the stage. And Sabu ended up distracting Rock. So Cactus Jack could get away. And then Sabu threw Rock through the tables. At this point, Sabu and Taz started tagging together. And thus, this led to kind of a feud between the Public Enemy and Sabu and Taz. So after this match, Mikey said he was unable to compete in the rematch. So he picked Kevin Sullivan as his replacement.
Why?
More of the WCW-ECW trade. The Malenko brothers have debuted as well. Jason, he has his pit bulls. There's the Bad Breed. There's a lot of tag team shenanigans going on right now.
Shenanigans.
Even during this, there's some big ones you can see. I think Joe Malenko was only there for a one-time-only deal. But you can actually see, towards the end of the year, Benoit and Malenko kind of start watching each other's back, what have you. So you see the two of them, the Public Enemy, Sabu and Taz, which is going to be a huge feud in 1995. Even Paul E. Dangerously takes a bump through a table.
Holy cow.
Yeah, so another funny, a little more just to wrap things up here. Tommy Cairo, he also had a little storyline where he's turned heel and he shows his new manager. He shows us his new manager, the Virgin Princess Angel. Remember, we was famous for banging everybody. Mm-hmm. So she said she's been waiting all her life and saving herself for Tommy Cairo.
There you go.
Who only has one front tooth. So the last card of the year, it was Hardcore Hell 94. This took place on the 17th of December. Yeah. It was at the ECW Arena, and there was only 800 in attendance. So it didn't draw as much as November to Remember. But in this one, we had Stevie Richards defeating JT Smith. ECW TV champ Dean Malenko defeating Ray Odyssey via submission. Chris Benoit defeated Hack Myers. 911 defeated the Pitbulls in a handicap match. Mikey Whipwreck defeated Don E. Allen. I don't think we've seen him in quite a while.
It's been some time.
Tommy Cairo and the Sandman tagged together with Woman and Angel versus Tommy Dreamer and Cactus Jack, which I think Tommy Dreamer now has Peaches on his side. So, and then Shane Douglas again faced Ron Simmons. The Public Enemy defeated Sabu and Taz in a no DQ match. Seemed a little... I mean, there was only like two really good matches on there. The Public Enemy and Sabu and Taz, and the two tag matches, actually. Because Shane Douglas, Ron Simmons, we see before. You know Ron Simmons isn't going to be around that long.
Right. He's just having a cup of coffee.
Yeah. So, you know he's not going to win. We basically round out the year with just a couple TV shows after that. A couple promos, a couple tag, and a little bit of tag team brawling. Then we see the formation of Cairo, Sandman, and Malenko, and Benoit. So, I believe Tommy Dreamer also adds Peaches and her big fake tits. Shane Douglas. He is now officially a world heavyweight champion. Although throughout the rest of the year, he only defends it against people who aren't going to stay with the company. Like Ron Simmons, Jim Powers, or in novelty, like once-in-a-lifetime tag team matches, like with Brian Pillman or Steve Austin, I suppose. Jason, he dropped the title at November to November to Too Cold, who in turn dropped it to Malenko. So to round out the year, Malenko is your tag team champion. And then the Public Enemy lost the titles to Cactus and Mikey at the title tournament, but dropped them back to the Public Enemy at November to Remember. But there is a lot of tag team turmoil right now.
I like that. That should be a name of a pay-per-view.
So there is a lot of tag teams and a lot of brawling and turmoil going on there. So I think that was it as far as anything interesting going on throughout the year. So your champs to round out the year, Shane Douglas, World Heavyweight Champion. Team Malenko is your ECW Television Champion. And then the Public Enemy are your World Tag Team Champions.
World.
So we did get a lot of new faces here. You got Dean and Joe Malenko, Chris Benoit, Ron Simmons, Brian Pillman, Jim Powers. Although some of those you probably won't see again, or at least not for a little while.
Not for a little bit.
We also saw some faces we haven't seen in a while. Tony Stetson, we haven't seen in a long time. JT Smith, and then Tommy Cairo, who's been nursing cane wounds for a month. We had debuting and departing Doink the Clown, a.k.a. Matt Bourne. Actually, I should say that the other way, huh? His real name isn't Doink the Clown. I mean, he's like, I've been thinking of a nickname. Matt. He actually only wrestled 4 total matches in ECW, which I think, and it looks like he didn't wrestle at all in 1995, so I think he had some like serious personal drug problems that kind of kept him out. And he actually just ended up dying in 2013, so not too long ago. Rockin' Rebel, he was fired for refusing to job clean in October. So no more Rockin' Rebel. Chad Austin, he was leaving for Smoky Mountain at this time. And this was worked into his storylines as he would come out, try to start like a Smoky Mountain chant or an SMW chant, and then just get completely destroyed by every wrestler that would come out of the locker room and just beat him down, even Shane Douglas. It's kind of funny. So 1994 rounded out pretty well. A lot of storylines, a lot of big, like, continuous storylines like Dreamer, Sandman, Tommy Cairo, all that. Fresh new acts and some hot tag team action. What are your thoughts on what we've come up to here on 94?
We've, like, come to a, like, jumping off point.
Nah, I feel like this is going to be a big year.
Start of something different.
Yeah.
Something new.
So
something extreme.
The other thing I was thinking of was kind of reading through that lineage of NWA champions. It's funny, actually, Shane Douglas holds a record for that, too, as being the shortest NWA champion, holding the belt seconds for a mere minute before he threw it down and declared himself the ECW World Heavyweight Champion. So that's it for 94. A lot to come in 95. There's actually some other stuff that's left out, but we'll have to wait until next time to get into that. Next up is February 1995, ECW Double Tables. So join us next time as we reopen the Extreme Wrestling Archive. Like, follow us on Facebook. You can watch us on Vimeo, YouTube. You can also listen to us on SoundCloud and iTunes. And then if you want to help defray some of the costs, you know, help us out, you can check out our Patreon page at Extreme Wrestling Archive. Make a little donation if you feel so fit. And then join us next time as we reopen the Extreme Wrestling Archive.